Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, August 3rd, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, can you believe that it is August?
I know. Fantastic.
Time is flying by. There's a lot going on. I did want to mention, I'm actually broadcasting this podcast or recording it from altitude. I'm at 1,700 meters above sea level in the French Alps. So I'm technically on a kind of, I don't know what I'm calling it, vacation, but I'm still working a bit. So, but anyway, so this is the first time we've been at this altitude for the podcast. I presume you're still in Cornwall, England. Things are good there?
I'm still 100 meters from the sea.
Yeah, well, that's good. So there's been a lot going on over the last week, and I just wanted to run down some quick kind of news items. Harvard announced last week that all interviews for this admission cycle are going to be virtual. I mean, that's not surprising to me. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be shocked if that's not what all the top schools do. The current environment, especially the schools in the United States, given the current environment with COVID-19, one thing I like about Harvard is it gets out of the gate early and makes decisions and sticks to them.
Yeah.
So fair play to them for making this call. I expect to see a lot of the other schools follow suit very shortly.
And I will say, I mean, this is tough for HBS because the interview is really important. I mean, they're a school that, you know, they whittle down the pool quite substantially when they're trying to figure out who they're going to interview. And the interview is super important to make that final decision for them. The interviewer has read the candidate's file, so it's usually a really personal kind of experience. And so, you know, I don't envy that the situation for any school, but I know, you know, it's hard when you can't meet someone face to face. Although, obviously, the technology where it is today, you know, imagine if this were 20 years ago or something, it would have been really different. So,
I think, quite frankly, it's going to be a lot easier for Harvard than it will be for Ross and Wharton if they're doing their team-based exercises and team-based interviews.
Yeah, and I think they did experiment with some virtual stuff there at those schools, but I wonder if it merits a change in the process because it's tricky. Other big news out of the MBA space was Georgetown. McDonough announced that their program is going to be 100% online this fall, which is not the same as what we're hearing from other schools. I mean, it's been a mixed bag, and I think it really depends on where the school's located. I expect some of the schools in places like California or Texas, where the pandemic has been really, you know, rearing its ugly head, may be more likely to be 100% online. But, you know, we've heard already from some schools more in the kind of New England, East Coast, Northeast, where they're thinking of more of a hybrid model. That's what they're announcing. I think this is all in flux, but it really is, it's just crazy. I cannot believe how, you know, there's just so much uncertainty that candidates have to deal with. And I definitely feel for them and the schools too.
Yeah, I mean, any of the folks that obviously are relocating for their MBA, which is the majority of top tier business school candidates, there must be a high level of stress and uncertainty right now, let alone the folks on wait lists trying to figure out where they're ultimately going to attend. But even those that know exactly where they're going, I mean, when do they move? Do they move? Are they doing it online?
Yeah.
You know, it's a moving target. And the news out of the United States, frankly, Graham, is not particularly good regarding COVID-19.
No, it's still on the rise. It seems like, yeah, I think it's, yeah, just so hard to know what's going to happen. And I think it's tough for the U.S. schools right now because they have to deal with COVID. They also have to deal with, you know, the current administration's kind of immigration policies and the election in the fall. Like, there's just a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And we're actually seeing this play out. I mean, I've, you know, heard from a number of candidates who are trying to make decisions about where to attend. And I've, you know, I talked with a candidate the other day who, you know, had money from a school that's maybe one notch below a school that, you know, you ordinarily you would say, oh, just go to the school, the top school that, you know, there's no money, but no brainer. But this person said, you know what, I'm going to take the money. There's so much uncertainty. And this is a good school. It's not like it's a dramatic drop, but this person was just saying, you know, I just don't know what kind of environment I'm going to graduate into. And I'd rather go to an MBA program where I graduate with almost no debt or very little, and have that, you know, kind of, whatever, security, you know. So this is, it's definitely playing a role, and we continue to see Maybe you can give us an update, because I've been seeing a lot on the wires. Have you seen, you know, it seems like there's still movement at a lot of schools.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm fairly sure I saw more movement even at Stanford this week.
Yes.
Last week, I should say, in terms of off the wait list. So Stanford's making moves.
Yeah.
That's going to have significant trickle-down effect. And back to your point with this candidate, it doesn't surprise me in the time of absolute uncertainty, potential, you know, recession, depression, you know, what is the economic outcome in the medium and to long term? Candidates' risk tolerance has to adjust in this environment. If, you know, we're so used to the environment where things are getting better, stronger, more innovative, you know, and you know, a greater economy and so on and so forth. We're so used to that that we become a bit blasé about risk tolerance.
Yeah.
But I think that's shifted for sure. So your description of that candidate, I imagine, is playing out across the MBA marketplace at the moment.
Yeah, agreed. So a couple more things before we get to the wiretaps.
Say some good news, Graham. We need something good, positive.
All right. So some positive news is that tomorrow we're doing the next class in the Admissions Academy, and it's going to be all about recommendation letters. And I think this is like such a crucial part of an application. You know, the schools are judging you on who you select, on the anecdotes that those writers share, and on their like objectivity. I mean, it's really a great opportunity for schools to get kind of an outside view of who you are and you know, see how that meshes with what you've said in your application. So we're gonna spend an entire 45 minutes, hour or so, talking about everything you need to know, about recommendations. So I'm looking forward to that. The other thing is that we've now done, I think, 15 admissions director Q&As, and some of the most recent ones that went up on the site were let's see, Michigan, Ross, and Emory. We also ran one for Boston College, ESA. So they're just, we keep putting those out. Those are really useful. If you're applying to a school and you don't read that, I just can't, I don't know why you wouldn't. So it's really good advice in there. And then the last thing is we're still running a survey for podcast listeners only. This URL has not been shared anywhere. So please go to bit.ly/clearadmit/podcast survey. That's all one word, all on lowercase. You can fill out the survey and tell us what you think of the podcast, how we can improve it, and we will definitely take any insights and feedback on board. And you know, I was going to say we need more reviews and ratings, as always, because I'm constantly asking people for that. But we did get a review this week, which I don't think you've seen, Alex, and it's from a fellow named Pietro Schisler, and this person's international, and they called the podcast super insightful. And they said, as a non-traditional background professional, the podcast has fed me lots of information in regards to the MBA world. I much appreciate it. Listen to it, even if you think you already know all there is to know. You will be surprised. So apparently we're unveiling gems and stuff, Alex, as people listen. But it's nice to get that feedback. So thanks, Pietro, for that.
No, that's fantastic. And I just say also, I know we had a quick conversation before we came on air, Graham, about the survey. And you said we had a number of responses already. So I just wanted to personally thank those folks.
Yeah.
That have already responded to the survey, because it is really important for us. We're kind of shooting in the dark a little bit in terms of putting these podcasts out, so getting that direct feedback is super important, and we will respond to it. That's, you know, if we're asking you to spend time, effort, and energy going to complete a survey, you can be assured that your feedback will help shape some of the things that we do in the future.
Yeah, and we're all about that. I mean, we're actually working on a big kind of top secret project at Clear Admit that's going to allow candidates to do some really cool stuff on our site this fall. So, and that was all based on, you know, the kind of noise from the crowd. we always want your feedback. So Alex, you picked out 3 ApplyWire entries. We're definitely in, you know, the next cycle, basically people kind of really wondering what their chances are. So anything else before we kind of dive in and start talking about these candidates?
No, let's kick on.
All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number 1. This person is applying to 5 schools and will hope to start in the fall of 2021. They're looking at Columbia, Dartmouth, HBS, MIT, and Wharton. So all top schools. They've been working in consulting and are thinking about a kind of entrepreneurial career after business school. The GMAT was 740, and GPA was 3.8. They wrote 8.8, but then corrected that later. Of course, I missed that correction, so my comments on their post are a little off. And then they've been working for 4 years. They're currently in London, and they want to end up in the US East Coast. And it's actually an interesting background that this person has, because they're a manager at a consulting firm. They mention it's a tier right below MBB. So let's assume a Deloitte or, you know, one of those types of companies. They've worked in New York for a year, Singapore for 1.5 years, and now London for 1.5 years. And they mentioned they went to a top five NESCAC school. I guess it's NESCAC. And those are a group of liberal arts colleges in the kind of, I think it's New England area. And it's a, like, I think it includes Connecticut College, Williams, some of the top schools in that kind of region of the U.S. They indicate they're really interested in healthcare, have been working a lot on projects in that domain. And they also mentioned they're an avid squash player. They take part in tournaments. And they mentioned they're originally from Pakistan. And also, you're going to love this, Alex, they are a huge fan of the podcast. And they find it inspiring to hear about so many great candidates. And they love the insights that you and I deliver week in and week out. So they asked to be featured, and here they are. What do you make of this candidate?
They spelt your name wrong, Graham.
They did? Oh, yeah. Well, it's okay.
I'm kidding. Frankly, Graham, this person's got to be a great candidate. The international experience in of itself, so they've worked in New York, Singapore, and now London. They're a manager at a, you know, maybe a second-tier consulting firm or whatever. But it sounds to me like this is pretty highbrow international exposure and experience, Graham. You combine that with their numbers, 740 GMAT, 3.8 GPA. That's got to be fantastic. They've got a passion for healthcare. We need more and more people having passion for healthcare, given the current crisis and, yeah, you know, potential future crisis of a similar nature, right? So healthcare has got to be a more and more important domain of, you know, whatever, right? Yeah. In terms of helping shape the world and taking care of everybody. So to me, this person fits all the dots, should be applying to the type of schools they've selected, right? So they're targeting top tier programs. It surprised me that they didn't include Kellogg in the mix, you know, given their healthcare focus, their consulting experience and so forth. So maybe they need to look at Kellogg. And so there's a couple of things I wanted to run by you, Graham.
Okay.
They're from Pakistan. How does that dial into the mix in terms of impacting their overall profile from your point of view? And then this idea that they're an avid squash player and clearly play the sport at quite a high level. So that's sort of, you know, the candidate that's a sports star and does something at a very high level. Again, how do you dial that into impacting an MBA candidate's profile?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting because, and I asked them this question, they haven't responded, but I asked on the website. I kind of wondered, do they have U.S. nationality or, you know, or a green card? I was kind of curious to know that. But frankly, even if you could argue that folks from Pakistan are maybe overrepresented in the applicant pool, or, you know, kind of often are, you know, male engineer types or whatever, that there's this like stereotype that exists. What I like about this candidate is that they did undergrad in the U.S. and it sounds like they maybe grew up in the U.S., right? So they're not in the, I wouldn't put them in the same category. And what I mean by that is just simply that they've actually already demonstrated a high level of performance in a U.S. top tier academic institution. And that's worth something. I think that whenever you're dealing with an international candidate who's not in the U.S. and didn't go to undergrad in the U.S., there's always that little bit of uncertainty about, you know, how well do you know their undergraduate institution? And that won't happen in this case. So I think this person, despite maybe being a little overrepresented in some aspect, right, you could argue kind of Asian American or South Asian American, however you want to characterize, is still, you know, they're rising to the top within that group for me because they went to a great undergraduate program. They did well. And, you know, the test score, as you pointed out, you know, everything's good, right? So I think the only other thing I would say is squash is, you know, they obviously, as you say, they're competing at a high level. That's all terrific. And they're passionate about it. And it sounds like they probably did it in college and are continuing, you know, to do so. I would say it's not the most unusual activity, and I hate to do this, but especially, you know, you find a lot of squash players at these like liberal arts colleges. It's a really popular sport. And you also find a fair amount of squash players in South Asia. And I'm not sure why that is. It must be, they're just, I don't know, it's a popular sport there or something. So I don't know that it necessarily jumps off the page the way, what did we have someone last week that was like a figure skater, right? So it doesn't jump off the page like that for me. But it shows that, I mean, again, this person, I love the international experience. I mean, isn't there like an MBA program where you spend time in, you know, New York, London, and Singapore? Like that exists. I think there's like some kind of alliance between three business schools. So I was like impressed to see that this person has worked in, you know, North America, Europe, and Asia. That's like such amazing experience to bring into the classroom. So I like that a lot. I had a couple of other thoughts, but what do you make of my comments here? Are you in agreement? Or are you kind of feeling?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, you know, being of Pakistani heritage, you know, it can sort of play both ways. It can potentially place you in a bit of an overrepresented pool. But again, this person's sort of experience in North America from an academic standpoint, and then this global experience. I mean, they've moved around the world. They've worked in big cities, done some really interesting and super interesting stuff, I imagine, in a very important space right now, as I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So I think this person can overcome this stuff if they even slightly considered to be from an overrepresented population. But to sort of really make sure that this doesn't become an issue at all, if they're ready, and it seems like they should be ready, they should apply in the first rounds, right?
Yeah.
So if they've got all their ducks in a row, don't run the risk of being bucketed into an overrepresented group by applying a little bit later in the second round. Apply in the first round. So that'd be my strongest piece of advice for this particular candidate, is to maximize his or her opportunity, because I don't even think we know that. Get the applications in the first round, at least to a good number of these programs.
Yeah, agree. And then the only other thing that I would say is that I wanted more clarity around the goals. So, you know, they mentioned entrepreneurship. They mentioned they're really interested in, you know, population health. So I just would want to know more about that. And I think to the extent that they can stay in that healthcare domain and have entrepreneurial goals there, that's smart. At the same time, I do wonder whether they should have an intermediate step. Like what might they do in the short term? Like, would they go to a biotech company or a major healthcare company and work for a year or two, maybe a former client or something, and then go and launch their own thing? Sometimes that's a bit more palatable and feasible for someone who has no track record of running their own company. But again, I like this candidate. One last thing about school selection. I think Kellogg's not here just solely because it looks like they basically drew a circle around the Northeast where they want to land and just pick the top schools in that region. So I'm guessing that's what it is. That's why there's no Stanford or Kellogg or Booth. But you're right, Kellogg has strengths in both consulting and healthcare, so they might want to look at it. And I also recommended that they reach out to the healthcare management program at Wharton and have you can have like an informational interview. You just can kind of get on the phone with someone there. So I would recommend they do that once they know kind of their overall strategy and are ready to talk.
And just one final point on these goals, this idea of setting up their own business in population health. Mm-hmm. To be honest, Graham, if this person's really passionate about that, and I can imagine they can be given their consulting experience in the healthcare domain across three different major sort of areas.
Yes.
Geographic areas. I can imagine they can be passionate about that. If they are passionate about this, that's a huge plus. If they can really talk with passion about why they're interested in developing business in this particular space, and so on and so forth, that will really carry the application in my book. And that might then make me think, well, if that is the case, then stick Stanford on the list too. And you think, well, that's all the way on the West Coast. It doesn't matter. I mean, if you end up getting an opportunity to either Harvard or Stanford, you know, is that could put you at a whole different level, right? So you don't want to discount a brand like Stanford just because of geography, because Stanford is so super powerful.
Yeah, I think you don't want to discount that. I think that they, you know, I guess Harvard and Stanford, you know, would be great places to fundraise, you know, in terms of using that network to fundraise. So I agree. If they can be passionate about it, if they have a clear business plan, and come into school with a plan around, you know, fundraising and getting this business off the ground, I could buy it. And it sounds like it could be interesting. So I'll walk back some of those comments and yeah, I guess it just depends on how crystallized this idea is. So in any event, let's move on and talk about the next candidate. But I really appreciate that person sharing their profile and also just the, you know, obviously always like the kind words about the podcast. So thanks for that. So let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person also wants to start in the fall of 2021, looking at four schools right now, which include Cornell, Emory, Georgetown, and Georgia Tech. They're currently an analytics consultant, hoping to get into either consulting or pharma after business school. And they mentioned a bunch of consulting firms, you know, Booz Allen Hamilton, Deloitte, PwC. Their GRE score is a 324. The GPA is a 3.0, and they have 5 years of work experience. And they indicated that they started their career at a Fortune 200 company's leadership program and got promoted, then left to go into consulting within a Fortune 500 company. They've been promoted again, and they work only in the kind of pharma domain. So I guess with all this COVID news, you end up picking some pharma folks this week. They mentioned that their big questions are like, where should they apply? Because they want to either go to a leadership program in big pharma after business school, or maybe stay in consulting. But they're worried, obviously, about this low GPA.
Right.
And their GRE is okay, but they're just worried that the GPA is going to kind of sink their chances. What do you make of this candidate and you know, his or her goals and school selection?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, Graham, the big elephant in the room for this candidate is the GPA 3.0. They've taken an additional class. I've taken two quant classes and obtained A's in both classes. So that's obviously a good thing to have done. My fear is that low GPA combined with GRE does not carry much weight, which I think is a reasonable fear in the admissions process. But again, they've done the corrective action, i.e. take a couple of classes. If they think they could take another class and get another A, that further proves their point that they will be ready when the MBA program starts. So to the extent that they can continue doing that, that's probably going to be helpful. The 324 GRE is a decent score. I think what the candidate is saying is, in combination with the 3.0, it's not a great score. But nevertheless, it's a pretty decent score, I think. I think this candidate should be looking at Duke and Kenan Flagler as real good target schools. And their pushback is, they think, well at least their initial pushback was that they think Kenan Flagler is a reach school for them. But I'm not sure that is the case. They've been promoted twice. So they've done well. It seems like they've done well in their career in the leadership program. They were promoted once, and then when they moved into the consulting firm, they've also been promoted again. So if they can really show impact at work and a passion for this pharmaceutical space, then these programs like Kenan Flagler and Duke that have very strong, elements in the healthcare sector, and you know they're in that research triangle and so on and so forth. To be honest, Graham, that's where I think they should be really pushing their candidacy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting. They had Cornell on their list. And, you know, you could argue that Cornell is certainly, you know, at least as highly ranked as UNC, right? I mean, they're, you know, and even Duke, they're in the...
And many would put it a little bit higher, quite frankly, right? I didn't really understand their argument against UNC, because, frankly, it's in the same tier in my book as some of the other programs they've listed.
Yeah. One thing we didn't get from this person is like where they want to be. And I noticed that, you know, they had a bunch of schools that are kind of, you know, like Georgetown, Georgia Tech, and Emory are all arguably, you know, kind of mid-Atlantic or Southeast, right? So,
yeah.
And then we mentioned UNC and Duke, and they seemed excited about it, even though they're worried maybe it's not, that they're not competitive enough. But so it sounds like they have a focus there in that region. I don't know if they've been working there or what, but and that's fine. I think the one thing I wanted to mention is that they said in their note that they've been told that, let's see, where is it, that other parts of my application will hold more weight if I submit a GRE instead of a GMAT. So I think, I just to kind of get into that, what they're saying, I think what they're trying to say is that if you submit a GRE, because schools like prefer the GMAT, that they kind of discount a GRE and then they just rely more on the rest of your application materials. I don't know where that comes from. Like, I think maybe in the first year that schools started taking the GRE, they might have had some trouble like figuring out exactly what it means to get a 324 on the GRE. But we're now like 10 years into schools accepting the GRE. And I think there's no real difference in terms of a school looking at the score and then like not like discounting it or something. I think they really, you know, they just take the score and use it. So I really don't think that's an issue. And again, the 324 is fine. It's not at the level of like a Harvard or a Stanford GRE average, but it's certainly at the level for the schools this person has on their list. So I think that's fine. I guess, yeah, I would roll the dice, like you say. I would go after some top schools because, you know, they have an impressive career with good progression. You know, they've done well in the GRE. They've taken these classes. So I would go for it. I mean, I think they could probably, you know, look at like Cornell and Emory as well as UNC and Duke and Georgetown and probably be fine. Like, I think they would hit on one of those for sure. So anyway, that's my take. But I you know, this is an interesting candidate. I mean, it's always a tough one when you've got a low undergrad. I did wonder, like, well, what are the circumstances behind the undergraduate GPA and what classes did they do poorly in? And we could get into all of that, but that's always interesting too. Like, is there an upward trend or downward trend or poor scores in courses that would be relevant to business school or, you know, so there's a lot to unpack there.
Right.
But I think this person can apply to better schools than they're thinking out of the gate.
Yeah. And they're also involved in that, you know, they're on the board of a local nonprofit. They participate in mentoring programs. That's really good stuff.
Yes.
Assuming that they're participating in these activities because they're interested in doing them rather than just doing them because it's the right thing to do.
Sure.
But mentoring is typically thought of quite highly in the admission circles.
Yeah.
Quite obviously, actually. I mean, if you're a mentor, I think that's a terrific opportunity for you to share your experiences, help nurture, you know, others or in whatever circumstance it is. So, you know, hat tip to some of those activities too. Again, presumably that they're a decent part of this person's out of work experiences and not just once a month quick checkbox type of activity.
Yeah, fair. So anyway, thanks for the post from that person. Hope that they, you know, take our advice on board and end up at a, you know, at a great school for healthcare stuff going forward. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So this person listed just one school, which is Georgetown, and they're hoping to start in the fall of 2021. They've been working in education and kind of nonprofit human capital before business school, and they're hoping to move into consulting. But they want to do it in the kind of higher, you know, in the education space or maybe social enterprise or human capital. So what I would kind of call, just kind of, you know, social impact type consulting. They have a GPA of 3.0. So this is our second 3.0 GPA of the day on the podcast. They've been working for 7 years. And I should mention that there are a few details here that are important. One is this candidate mentioned that they're looking at some full-time programs, but mostly flex programs so that they can kind of work and study at the same time. They also mentioned that they're a Latinx candidate, and so, you know, underrepresented minority, and that their low undergraduate GPA might be compensated a bit because they have a 4.0 graduate GPA. They did a master's in education. They're also a Teach for America alum, so that's just another kind of piece in their profile. So what did you think of this candidate? Because I know you had some back and forth with this person on the site.
Yeah, I had a little bit of back and forth. And, you know, they obviously they've got the 3.0 GPA. That's a potential issue. They've got a 4.0 in their master's in ed, so that obviously helps. TFA alumni, I think, is a positive. We see quite a few folks coming out of Teach for America, applying to top programs. The reason why I selected this candidate, Graham, is I'm kind of interested in this sort of, they're primarily interested in flex MBA programs. And I guess my question to you is, do you see this as a bit of a trend? You know, we're seeing more and more programs offering sort of hybrid type models. And certainly now that they're having to do this in preparation of, you know, during the COVID-19 pandemic, are some schools going to examine this new sort of hybrid model that they've in effect had to develop for their full-time programs and potentially continue to offer this sort of opportunity in conjunction with a you know, more traditional full-time experience somewhere down the road? I just thought it would be an interesting discussion. Talking about this person particularly, obviously they got to take the test, the standardized test. Hopefully they do very well in that. But yeah, I mean, this is a little bit of a, frankly, Graham, it could go sort of either way. They've targeted Georgetown as a program that they're considering applying, and I think that could be very viable, but it does to a large extent impact on how well they do on that test score, as well as like the impact they've had over what is now 7 years of work experience. So they're getting a little bit over the average in terms of the mean number of years of work experience. Mm-hmm. So that again might be a reason why they're deciding, well, maybe I don't want to stop my career completely for a year or two to take a full-time experience. Maybe the flex program makes more sense given the additional years of experience.
Yeah. So my first, let me talk about this candidate, and then we can talk briefly about, you know, flex and how that's impacting, you know, MBA studies and stuff. But I think, I mean, this person's in DC, and so, you know, he or she is looking at Georgetown, and I'm going to guess that maybe they're looking at Georgetown's flex program. And we actually did an entire podcast episode with Shelley Heinrich, who's director of admissions at Georgetown, where we talked about the flex MBA and its growth and like just how it works. Because frankly, I think a lot of our listeners and site users are less familiar with like the idea of a program that you do, you know, while working and, you know, some on campus, some online, and just having that flexibility to kind of stretch it out and that kind of thing. So, So in any event, I'm guessing that's why that school is the one on the list and that, you know, he or she's still kind of trying to think about where else. I will say that I think this is one of those instances where the 3.0 is possible to overcome with the 4.0, you know, graduate masters, especially if the test score lines up. And so they're not taking it until October. And I would argue that this person should spend a lot of time, maybe even take a class or get a tutor if they can, to get a good score on the GRE or the GMAT, whichever one they want to take. It sounds like they're aiming GRE, because a really good GRE score could change the entire, you know, kind of profile in some respects, because it could help make the argument that 4.0 they got in grad school is more, is a better kind of predictor of their academic aptitude than the 3.0 in undergrad. And as I said with the last candidate, it'd be good to know what were the circumstances of the 3.0 and was their growth or, you know, kind of a better results in junior and senior year in college than in the first 2 years. The other thing I wanted to mention is that given this person's goals, like, you know, somebody who posted, and I love the comments we get on the site, there's sometimes some really insightful points made. And someone mentioned a whole bunch of different schools from Yale to Berkeley, Ross. I mean, they just mentioned a number of schools. And I was thinking, if this person's open to full-time and is considering at least applying to a couple of full-time programs, you know, I would throw my hat in the ring, especially if the GRE lands more or less in the ballpark, at some of the very top schools. Because while this person might be a little bit older, I mean, I could see, you know, Yale and Wharton and other kind of top schools seriously considering a candidate with such unique work experience and kind of frankly interesting goals too. And, you know, Teach for America, they're also active in the TF Teach for America, you know, alumni network. They're a leading alumni of color in DC in that regard. So I think there's a lot to like here and a lot of, you know, schools will a lot of things that schools would be drawn to. So I would say buckle down on the test because that could open some serious doors and serious scholarship dollars as well in case this person doesn't want to go you know, is worried about like, oh, I don't want to leave my job because of the finances. But if the MBA is like half price or near free, then that changes things too. So do you agree with that? I mean, obviously, I know we want to talk a little bit about flex in general, but...
Yeah, I mean, I do actually, the way you put it, for sure. And also, I mean, ed tech, you know, we talk about the healthcare space being very hot right now and very important. I think ed tech is also a very fast-moving, fluid space right now. So,
yes.
Some, you know, there's definitely a lot of opportunities in that space. So that should further enable this candidate. So yeah, I mean, I think your principal advice to this candidate is absolutely spot on. Really make sure to do as well as they can, get their best score in the test score. And if that puts them, I would say, into the sort of, you know, M7 top 16 type full-time programs, that's where they want to go.
Yeah.
If we're talking a little bit further out, you know, top 20, top 30 or whatever, then yeah, maybe the flex option is a better option to continue the career simultaneously. And maybe that's one way to look at it.
Yeah, and I think Georgetown's flex program is really good. So if this person wants to stay put in DC and just pursue that, if that's where the chips fall, I mean, it's a great program. And it would give them, as we, you know, this kind of sounds ridiculous, but the flexibility that they would need to work. And
yeah.
There are other programs out there too. I think Tepper has a flex MBA that they offer and have been offering for quite some time that's very well regarded. And, you know, there are a lot of ways to do this. I think, you know, there are also just regular sort of part-time programs that are more in-person, but, you know, just evening, weekend type stuff. So there's a lot of different types of program out there. And so sometimes I think it gets confusing with all the different, you know, ways that schools name this stuff. But you're right. I think more and more schools are better prepared to offer flex or hybrid type stuff based on the, you know, all the hoops they've had to jump through here. So yeah, it's, you know, yeah, COVID has definitely forced, you know, these schools to innovate a bit and to use the tools that have been available for a while, but maybe not as widely used as they should have been. You mentioned that EdTech is a really hot area. I totally agree. I think we're actually in that category, Alex, you know, with our company, right? So, but in any event,
we're hot.
Yeah. So, in any event, yeah, but I love this candidate's background. And I think, as I said earlier, there will be a lot that appeals, to the admissions officers at top schools. So, go for it on the test, see where the chips fall and keep us posted. Anything else for today? I did want to just kind of nudge people one more time to go and fill out our podcast listener survey. Again, you just go to bit.ly/clearadmitpodcastsurvey, all one word, all lowercase. We'd love to hear from you and, you know, just use your feedback to make this podcast as great as it can possibly be. Other than that, Alex, thanks for picking out these entries as always. And yeah, I hope you're staying healthy and safe. And I guess we'll connect in 1 week's time. But any closing thoughts for our listeners this week?
No, just everyone stay safe. I mean, obviously, the more we read the news, the more we realize that this pandemic has got a long way to go yet. So stay safe. Best of luck, everybody. And look forward to next week.
Yep, we'll see everyone in 1 week's time. And don't forget to tune into our Admissions Academy tomorrow, Tuesday, at I think it's noon Eastern. So looking forward to talking about recommendation letters. And we'll see everyone on the podcast in 1 week's time. Thanks again, Alex.